This is Up to Date on KCUR 89.3. When Dr. Benjamin Grin talks to first and second year medical school students, chances are good that he's not just talking about the latest disease or what medications are best for a particular condition. Instead, Dr. Grin sometimes focuses on social issues such as redlining, systemic racism, and stigma. Dr. Grin has found that a background on those social issues helps doctors more effectively and compassionately care for their patients. Too often, he says, doctors tell people what they should do without really considering their abilities and where they are in their lives. Dr. Benjamin Grin is an assistant professor of primary care at Kansas City University. Ben Grin, nice to have you here. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Russell Campillo is a peer educator at KC Care, which provides health care for poor Kansas Cityans. He often works with Dr. Grin. Russell, nice to have you. Welcome.
Thanks for having me as well.
Well, Dr. Grin, you know, redlining, stigma, systemic racism, why are these terms something important for doctors to understand here?
You know, I'm really privileged to have a job where I get to wear multiple hats. So I work at Kansas City University as a professor teaching medical students in the first and second year, but I'm also an HIV primary care doctor at the KC Care Health Center. And in teaching first and second year medical students, one of the challenges is that our students spend a lot of time sitting, reading, learning about diseases, but they don't get to spend that much time learning from the patients that they're ultimately going to have the chance to take care of.
And so, and why is that important?
You know, it's so, what's so critical is that social issues, in particular what are called the social determinants of health, actually account for about 80% of human health. And so, you know, what we teach in medical school, which is really medical care, really only affects about 20% of health. That's the care that we provide in hospitals and clinics. What really affects health are things that affect our communities. So, you know, do you have access to healthy food? You know, what does your neighborhood look like? Is it safe to walk in your neighborhood at night? What's pollution like in your community? And those are really the factors that affect health, and our students need to understand those factors in order to provide good care for their patients.
So what you're saying is if you're treating HIV for one person, you may not treat the next person exactly the same way.
Exactly. You know, really, you need to understand your patients and understand their lives to provide quality care for them.
And when doctors don't understand their patients, the result sometimes is what?
So multiple things. You know, often if when doctors don't understand their patients or don't listen to their patients, the patients don't want to come back and they don't want to seek care. And I think HIV is a really good example of that. Patients are often experience stigma and discrimination in society, but they may also experience stigma and discrimination in medical offices and with doctors. And when patients don't feel comfortable with their doctors, when they don't feel like their doctors understand where they're coming from, they may not want to seek care, they may not take their medications, and they may avoid seeing us.
I'm wondering how unusual it is for a doctor to teach other doctors about issues like the ones we're talking about here today.
You know, I think it is increasing in prevalence for medical schools to address these issues. But I think, you know, bringing in patients is probably a little bit unique. And that's what I really think is exciting about this, not just to teach it in a context of a lecture, but to bring in folks who have that lived experience to share their stories.
Well, one of those persons is Russell Campillo, and he's a peer educator. And Russell, I'm wondering, what does that mean, being a peer educator?
So being a peer educator is a, for me, and I can only speak from my own experience, is a person living with HIV. I also bring to the table, I'm a former substance user, a long history of substance use that has experienced homelessness, has experienced lack of food, has experienced lack of support.
So you've lived a little bit in the real world is what you're saying.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Hey, how did you find yourself in this role of becoming a peer educator?
So I was diagnosed really in 2009 with HIV. I've been living with HIV ever since. I've been taking medication ever since, undetectable status, moving in with, moving along with case managers and stuff like that that have helped support, have given me support through their roles. Mm-hmm. And that has allowed me to, you know, go from quote unquote straight laced and clean cut to being a drug user, and then coming back on the other side of that and getting out of those issues.
How did you get involved at KC Care and with Dr. Grin?
Actually, I'm also a patient at KC Care, so a long-standing care through them. And then I was able to obtain a job working as a peer.
Hey, how do you help Dr. Grin do what he does?
I think my lived experience is really important for students and new providers to understand, because if you go into a world, and just like me as a peer educator, I didn't know what that was. I was already doing it. But when I got into that role, I started learning new things. And so if you go into something without the knowledge, you're not really going to know how to provide the proper service to people that need it.
And being a peer educator, explain again, so what do you do?
So I teach people how to live with HIV. I also support others that are challenged with substance use on how to get in recovery, how to use harm reduction to benefit their sobriety, to get themselves into a position where they can stop using, hopefully. And then just in general, apply resources to their needs, as well as it's very similar to a community health worker. And community health workers are people that are resource bound, like that's what they're looking for whether that might be housing, whether that might be a gift card to help them, you know, get a bite to eat because they're hungry. And, you know, I mean, maybe we live in a food desert that's getting more and more expensive as we speak.
So when you work with Ben and you're talking to medical school students, then Russell, how are you interacting with them? What kinds of information can you provide to them to help them become better and more sensitive doctors?
I think what that boils down to is just being genuine and putting a face to what HIV might look like. But I'm just one face, and I get to do these talks with my another colleague of mine, Mario Richardson. And he, as a person that comes from a white background, doing those talks with him as a person of color helps other people engage into those conversations a little bit deeper. And even though our experience might be similar, it's different at the same time.
Are there things you've actually talked to the students about, things about what's appropriate to say to someone with a condition like HIV, and maybe things that aren't appropriate to say?
Right. And so one of the things that we try to engage people with is the change in the nature of our programming. And as individuals, we each have a programming. And that programming is language, so it could be derogatory terms that we're used to. And nowadays, people are using the terminology queer to define themselves, and that's okay, you know. And for me, that has a completely different connotation. So it's very derogatory, but at the same time, I need to learn a different way myself. And so when we supply essentially the worksheets by just listen to what we're telling you, that allows the students then to internalize some of that information instead of just reading from a book.
Yeah. You're living with HIV, as you've said, Russell, and are a former meth user. Did those things, you know, did it make you hesitant to get care initially?
As far as HIV goes, I was consistent in my HIV testing, which was regular, which should still be about every 3 to 6 months. Pardon me. About every 3 to 6 months,
right.
And that allows you to keep a gauge on as to what your health is doing, okay, especially if you're sexually active. And then, if I can reel myself back to that, could you repeat that question?
Well, I'm just wondering, you know, were you hesitant to get help initially as someone who had HIV?
Okay.
Because there's so much, you know, a lot of people feel there's a lot of shame attached to that, and they don't reach out when maybe they should be reaching out.
Yeah, and the terminology that I use speaking to the students, as long as my mama knows what I'm doing, it doesn't matter what anybody else thinks. So I'm really fortunate in that fact that even though I felt like I had no support, I always had support.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I can only speak from my experience, but a lot of my clients are people of color and have never had that support. You don't talk about being gay. You don't talk about having sex with other men. You don't talk about diseases. You don't talk about diabetes. You don't talk. It's just as treatable. But at the same time, we want to make sure that we're doing the proper things to have that treatment.
Do you think the stigma around HIV has begun to fade after all these years?
No.
Really?
No.
Yeah.
Absolutely not. The stigma surrounded by HIV, even in a dating sense, is very, very difficult, because there's two things that you do, especially in the state of Missouri. You're required by law to disclose your status if you're going to be sexually active with someone. And those laws are currently in change, so that's a good thing. But when you disclose that status, the chances that you're going to be ghosted is pretty high. Mm. Because as soon as somebody finds out you're dirty, and I say quote-unquote dirty,
right.
I've already showered today. I showered for the show. I shower. Mm. You know, I use soap and water. That doesn't mean just because I have HIV doesn't make us dirty.
Yeah.
You know, just because I'm a former substance user doesn't make me dirty.
What are some other tips that you've tried to teach these medical students about patient care and bedside manner, you know, when addressing patients who might be living with one of these conditions?
One of the things that I like to return to almost every single time is when you walk in the room and somebody has HIV and you put on gloves, that immediately tells that person that you don't want to touch them. And so as a provider, reach out. You can find a place that maybe you're feeling nerves, but you have to take your personal cultural background and remove it from that situation, regardless of what it is.
At some point, you may have to put the gloves on, but you're saying not walking in the door first thing you do.
Yeah, not walking in the door first thing you do. HIV is not transmitted through the skin. It's not transmitted through touching somebody or hugging or kissing. There's lots of different ways it can be transmitted, but it's not surface.
Mm-hmm.
It's not surface.
You know, I'm sitting here listening to this, Ben, and thinking what a great tip that is, something that a lot of people might not even think about.
Yeah, and you know, I think one of the really unique things about HIV in 2022, and challenging too, I think, is that in 2022, HIV is really a chronic disease, and it's a chronic disease just like diabetes. Unfortunately, the stigma is still there. But from a medical standpoint, treating HIV is a lot like treating diabetes. And actually, in my clinical practice, I think it's easier than treating type 2 diabetes. A lot of my patients are on one pill, once a day regimens, and they see their doctor every 6 months. We check blood work. And we also know now in 2022 that undetectable equals untransmittable, which means that when HIV is able to be controlled to undetectable levels of the virus in the blood, that means that people cannot transmit HIV through unprotected sex. And the risk is really 0%. It's not 0.1%. It is not possible to transmit.
Hmm.
And I think learning that lesson and helping our students spread that message can help reduce some of the stigma.
Yeah. And again, students may not be aware of any of this. And putting a face to a condition surely is really helpful for them.
Absolutely. And I also want them to know, you know, from the chronic disease perspective, our patients living with HIV who are able to take their medications daily really can live long, healthy lives and should expect the same life expectancy as someone that's not living with HIV.
Yeah.
The challenge is that because of the stigma and discrimination and for a number of other reasons related to social factors, a lot of patients aren't able to stay engaged in care. So, you know, about 50% of people who are living with HIV are not retained in care. They're not seeing their doctor regularly. And that may be because they're experiencing substance use, they're experiencing homelessness, they're experiencing other challenges in their life that make it difficult for them to stay engaged in their HIV care. But if future doctors can understand those factors and try to engage with patients around those factors,
right,
we can get more people treated.
But when did you first begin to think that it would be important to bring these social issues right into the classroom? Because surely you must have been recognizing that your students just weren't in touch with some of these issues.
You know, I actually think our students are pretty interested in these issues, and a lot of them are sometimes even more in touch than me or the faculty around these issues, and they ask for this kind of thing. But, you know, one of the things I found is that the subjects I teach tend to naturally lend themselves to addressing social factors. So HIV is a condition that you can't understand the medical without understanding the social and interpersonal. The same thing with substance use disorder. You know, we can talk about medications we use to treat substance use disorder. We can talk about diagnostic criteria. But unless you understand the scope of what's going on in people's lives and how to address those challenges, you're not really treating the whole disease.
Did your bosses buy into your vision, or did you have to do some sales job on them to get them to come around?
You know, I'm really thankful to work at Kansas City University, which I think is a place where we are very focused on health equity and social determinants as something that needs to be addressed in medical education. KCU recently brought in Dr. Rex Archer, who's the former health director of Kansas City.
I was going to say, he's been on the show any number of times, and you work with him closely.
Yeah, and it's really fun to work together. And, you know, we kind of bring a different perspective to public health issues because he really worked on an administrative level, operating and running a large public health department for many, many years. Personally, I see myself as kind of a one-on-one clinical public health practitioner. I treat patients in a clinic, and I do HIV primary care, and I do general primary care, and I try to address public health from the one-on-one patient perspective. So I think it offers kind of a complementary approach that our students can really learn from.
What does Dr. Archer talk to the students about based on his years, so many years of public health experience, as you just mentioned?
The students love hearing from him. Today, he's going to give a talk on introduction to health equity and public health. He talks a lot about the history of the public health system in the United States, about health inequities in the country, and about the things that can be done to address them. He also talks about COVID-19 and the public health response to COVID-19. He's going to talk about monkeypox with our students. I think he really talks about a broad range of issues, but really with that unique perspective of having led a large public health department for many years.
I was going to say, how do your students react to Dr. Archer? How do they react to Russell when he comes and visits?
They really love all of it. They love anything related to public health and health equity. Specifically, when Russell comes to speak to our students, I have gotten feedback from some of our students that experience was one of the most powerful experiences they had in their first 2 years of medical school.
Huh.
They just feel like being able to hear from patients is going to help them become better doctors, but it also kind of reconnects them to the reasons they went into medical school.
Yeah.
Because they came to help people, but then they're sitting and like studying biochemistry for hours and hours and like, why am I doing this? And then they hear from Russell and then they're like, yeah, this is why I went into this. This is why I want to do this.
I was going to say, in some ways here, Ben, you're suggesting that the way we teach medical students so focused on textbooks and learning that maybe we're ignoring this idea that ultimately you're going to be working with real people out there.
You know, I think that is true to some extent. I think KCU does a really good job of integrating the personal aspect into medical education.
Yeah.
The challenge is that to become a really good doctor, you need to study for thousands of hours and learn stuff that is hard to learn, and sometimes it's boring. But I think as long as we can insert the interesting and the personal and the human component early on, it helps folks stay connected and stay motivated.
Russell, what's your sense of how students react when you come and visit?
I have a hard time seeing grateful sometimes, but when I'm there, and actually when we're there speaking to them in general, that's how that comes back to us, because people will come out of their seats and come down and just chit-chat with us for a little bit and ask questions, or mm-hmm. maybe one in particular will say, hey, look, I'm going back to my community that's in another state, and
yeah.
now I can get to take this information and try and change things where I'm from.
Yeah. Ben, is there something to what you're doing where you're actually teaching your students to use their voices outside of the doctor's office to even advocate for change? Is that part of all this?
I think that's absolutely part of it. I think one of the interesting challenges I see is when I present this material about health equity and the challenges in our country, I often will get questions, emails from students, what can I do to address this? This seems too big to address. And I kind of tell the students there are two things they need to do. One is when they're in the exam room with a patient, they need to understand their patient's lives and give them advice that's realistic. So if your patient lives in a neighborhood where there isn't access to healthy food and where there's violence in their neighborhood, don't go tell them to go eat quinoa and kale from Whole Foods and run a mile at night. Think
if
of something
they're having
practical.
Some weight issues you're talking about.
Right.
Yeah.
But then the other piece is that policy advocacy needs to happen. We need to change the government policies that create these inequities in the first place. And doctors are leaders in our communities. They're not just going to be clinicians, but they are also going to be recognized as politicians, as board members, and they're going to have lots of opportunities to create change. And I want our students to recognize their power.
You know, Russell, you're obviously not a doctor, but do you think after having spent the time you have that this idea of bringing in folks like yourself to a greater extent makes a lot of sense when it comes to training our doctors of the future?
It's 100% change. In addition to that, as advocates, there's some of us, including myself, that go to the government and we go to Capitol Hill and we speak to the representatives and tell our story and say, hey, look, this is why we need all this money, whether it's Ryan White coverage, whether it's substance abuse, support and things like that.
That's Russell Campillo, a peer educator at KC Care, which provides health care for poor Kansas Cityans. We're also joined by Dr. Ben Grin, an assistant professor of primary care at Kansas City University. Thank you both for explaining all this to us. Much appreciated.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Up to Date is a production of KCUR 89.3. Our theme music was composed by the great Bobby Watson. The program is produced by Danny Alexander, Zach Wilson, Elizabeth Ruiz, and Reginald David. Our engineer is Paul Nakatura. I'm Steve Kraske. Thanks for listening.